Concordia University Chicago is the distinctive, comprehensive university of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. We're committed to increasing LCMS faculty and staff members. This is Dr. Daniel Gard, president of Concordia University Chicago. If you are a member of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod with excellent professional credentials, please consider applying for our faculty or staff family. Current openings are posted at cuchicago.edu/HR.
You go into your high school government class and you give your opinion defending marriage as between a man and a woman. The class is not going to look at you and say, how brave. Your classmates are going to look at you and say, how intolerant.
This de-churched language doesn't recognize what's really at stake. The salvation of these people's souls. When we pretend like it's not their fault, we're not being honest. We got to tell the truth.
They're opposed to femininity, but they're also opposed to masculinity. The worst being in the world is a man. The best being in the world is a male individual who is feminized.
We stand there over the grave and insult the grave. You can have this body just for a little while. But on the last day, Jesus will stand on the earth and he will call the name of this saint that we're putting right here, and the dead will come forth.
In about 20 minutes, we'll play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. It's a simple game we like to play with our listeners where we play four soundbites from this week's Issues Etc. audio. You listen, and then you give us a call and vote, 1-877-623-MYIE, or vote at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. You can email us your vote, talkback@issuesetc.org, or send us a vote via Twitter, @issuesetc. We will be giving away the LPR bundle package. That is a Luther Rose Medallion, courtesy of Ad Crucem, and I Have Issues t-shirt and Issues Etc. travel mug, pen, bumper sticker, and notepad. It goes to the listener with the best vote for Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week in about 20 minutes. Things in our schools are going from bad to worse, and now from worse to the unthinkable. Really, if it were not so tragic for the students involved, in some cases the teachers involved, the ridiculous. We're going to be talking about a Florida school district's transgender student policy, of which the parents in that school district until recently knew nothing. Joining us to do so, Joy Pullman, managing editor of The Federalist and author of the book The Education Invasion, and a recent column titled School Punishes Male Teacher for Refusing to Watch a Naked Girl in the Boys' Locker Room. Joy, welcome back.
Hi there.
If I did not know better, I would say the title of your recent column would have to be dark, sick satire, but it isn't. Tell us the story from this Florida school district.
Well, Pasco County Public Schools is a school district in the Tampa, outside of the in the Tampa metro area in Florida. They have 70,500 students, and unbeknownst to parents, like you mentioned just a minute ago, this is common across the country. It's beginning to be the fact that parents and even the school board sometimes doesn't know that this is happening. Quietly adopted a policy that allows people to basically use the facilities for a specific sex based on identifying themselves as transgender. So that policy went into place kind of at the behest of a newly hired, quote-unquote, LGBT liaison from the school district who was advising the school and coordinating its policies in that regard. And so then what happened was in one of the district's middle schools, while the boys and girls are after their PE class, they're changing, and a girl walked into the middle room and into the locker room. And the boys, of course, you know, they're in the middle of changing, you know, a letter from the lawyers in, it's not a case yet, but they made a complaint to the district to ask them to basically change the policy. So this organization called Liberty Council says in their letter, you know, the girl walked in right in the middle of boys changing, literally catching them undressed with their pants down. And they came out and said there is both a male PE coach and a female one. And so the boys went to the male coach and said, "Coach, there's a girl in here. What's going on?" And he had been barred from talking to them or to anyone else about what was going on because, according to the school district, that's a violation of the young lady's privacy rights. Apparently, obviously, no mention of the boys' privacy rights. So he was unable to say respond to their queries at all while they're saying, you know, why is there a girl in our locker room? And then after that, both he and the female teacher expressed, you know, we don't support this policy. We think this needs to be changed to their, you know, their school, their principals, their bosses, basically. And they were told, it's your job to implement it. Otherwise, you're going to be fired. And so the male coach expressed to his, you know, administrators, I am not going to be in there where I might, you know, be seeing, you know, this is middle school girl, like 10, 11, 12-year-old child, female girl. Yeah, you know, that's changing after sports class. And his administrator, you know, quoted in this letter is an email from the school administrator telling him that he would be disciplined for refusing to supervise the locker room while this little girl was in there, you know, undressing. And so rather than being actually given, you know, harsher discipline, he was instead reassigned to a different school. But that in itself is a sanction for, you know, again, refusing basically to be a pervert, to stare, you know, to be in the room while a little girl is changing. And so after that happened, it took apparently a little while for parents to figure it out because the school district had basically this gag order on teachers talking to parents. But once, you know, they heard from their sons, you know, what was going on, and they went around and asked what's going on and finally figured it out and been trying to get some information, they couldn't get anyone to talk about anything. And so a nonprofit organization that specializes in religious liberty, you know, took on the case pro bono and sent a letter to the school board, you know, outlining all the, you know, information. I'm getting basically, you know, my information from them and from their lawyers. Went to the school district and said, you know, hey, this is a problem. You need to stop this. They outlined all the legal reasons and some of the moral reasons that's the case. And to this, and that was about a month ago at the end of September. And I just talked with a lawyer late last week. No, actually, it was, I think, Tuesday of this, a couple of days ago. And the school district has yet to take any action whatsoever to change the policy.
Okay, so this is insanity. I mean, if I can try and sort that out, there is a student.
That's your bottom line.
There's a young girl in this school who believes that she's a boy. And therefore, she wants the right to change in the boys' locker room with the other quote-unquote boys, the boys who are really
boys. As well as a number of other things, but yes.
Yes. And then in order to keep this situation under control, safe,
right.
I don't even know what the goal is here. A male PE teacher was essentially being required against his objection.
Mm-hmm. As a condition of his job, right.
To be in there while this girl who thinks she is a boy changes with the boys who are really boys.
That's right.
And I seem to remember this was just, I don't know, it seems like only 20 minutes ago, but I'm sure it was a couple years ago, being assured that these kind of situations would never, ever, ever arise in our schools if we started to toy with transgender policy.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and it still happens today. Whenever people publicize incidents, so for example, you know, there was one just last year in Georgia where as a result of the same policy, allegedly a 5-year-old girl was assaulted by a boy in her school bathroom. And I mean, it was for the exact same reason. And then you mention that and you're told that, you know, you are against rights for people. You are the evil, mean bigot. You are lying. You're smearing, you know, the discriminating, all of the, you know, the evil buzzwords. When all you're doing is saying, look, you know, the facts are the facts. This little girl came home and told her mother that, she, you know, a boy went into her bathroom, pushed her against the wall and started touching her genitals. If, I mean, we know things that have less, you know, evidence behind them have almost taken down, you know, a new Supreme Court justice in this country. And the only difference seems to be, you know, the political context of who is making the allegation, you know, whether it helps or hurts you know, politically correct causes.
And why is the school district there in Florida, why is it refusing to discuss this openly with parents of the students?
Well, I think there's a couple of reasons for that. I mean, then there's kind of the surface reasons and then there's the underlying reasons. So, I mean, the surface reasons, of course, they claim that they are trying to protect the privacy of the student who, you know, is the reason for these policies being changed in the school. So, you know, if they talk about this little girl, you know, that is quote unquote a violation of her privacy rights. It brings too much attention to her. It's not helpful for her. She deserves to have everything completely normal in her life, even though she's not acting normal. So everyone else needs to have all of their, you know, environment turned upside down to quote, give this little girl the environment that she wants. But also, I mean, another reason, of course, is when things like this typically happen, there's usually, you know, a letter sent home to parents. There's an email sent home to parents. I mean, we're talking about things as simple as, okay, you know, we're moving school pickup from this side of the building to the other side of the building, or we're changing the time, you know, 5 minutes early or later, or whatever the thing is. You know, there's always a general notice sent out to basic stuff like this. And this is a very, obviously, a significant policy change. And there was, you know, no notice sent around to parents, which, by the way, is actually typical. I mean, I've been following a lot of these cases around the country, and in every single one of them, there's never the note sent home to families. There's never a public announcement of the change. It you know, people find out after the fact, after their child has been in the locker room assaulted, or, you know, or even just exposed, or even just questioning, mom, you know, my teacher in kindergarten read me this book that happened in California, you know, without any warning. You know, the kindergarten teacher was reading children, you know, books about the fact that boys can change, the fantasy that boys can change into girls and vice versa. Anyway, so those are kind of some of the surface reasons, that the privacy and the fact that, of course, parents are going to get really mad. But I think really the underlying reason is uncovered in some of the materials that I quote in the article we're talking about. So I went and looked. This, the Pasco County School District in Florida, their LGBT liaison, put out a policy. I mean, she actually didn't put it out, but it was found, you know, it's public information. It's created with taxpayer funds, you know, by a public employee. So she created this document that explains the school's policy to staff at the school. You know, there are brand new LGBT policies, including this bathrooms thing. So inside that document that I read, and I think it's actually maybe 40 to 50 pages, but it's very clearly communicated that parents are a frequent and general threat to children. So, I mean, for, you know, things that as outright as, you know, parents who don't immediately support their children, you know, are a threat to the child's well-being, you know, parents not getting with the program if their child decides that he or she is gay or transgender. When they don't do that, you know, their kid's more likely to have suicidal thoughts, to the extent that it is that school district, and this is, again, this is not an outlier in these policies, it is that school district and the general policy to let the child decide whether his or her parents will know if that these things are happening at school, that the child is going in the opposite sex locker room, that the child is participating in opposite sex sports, has decided to be called by a new name. In this Florida school district, there was a news article written by like a local LGBT news organization about the woman that is working for the schools, paid by taxpayers. She has used her position to have students in the school to bring them to an event by a local LGBT organization that hands out to minor children HIV PrEP drugs. And I didn't know what that was, so I had to ask. I had to find out what that is a drug that is supposed to boost the child's immune system so that when the child has potentially HIV positive sex, this is a minor we're talking about, that child will be less likely to contract AIDS. So this teacher, she's a school psychologist, is helping children with or without their parents' knowledge get connected to an organization that is enabling their ability to have HIV risky sex. I mean, I don't even know what to say about this. It sounds like we're living in the Twilight Zone, but that was public. I mean, you can still find the information. It's out, you know, straight up on, you know, just announced like it's normal news in a news report that I found.
It's
flabbergasted. Yes. What do you even say at that point? Like, you know?
I'm very seldom speechless, but I am at this particular moment. Look, these schools are run by, I think, otherwise intelligent people who maybe on their own would say, this is the stupidest thing I ever heard. This is dangerous. But for some reason, when assembled together in school administrations or school boards or something like that, all of that caution, all of that common sense flies out the window. How do we explain the fact that otherwise intelligent, sensible, and people who genuinely do care about the welfare of children can be led by, in this case, this LGBT liaison that the school hired to do things that are so manifestly dangerous to children and so completely contrary to parents' wishes?
I don't think it is a coincidence that the person who is, you know, kind of the tip of the spear in this instance is a school psychologist, because human psychology is a very important component of this. For one thing, I mean, it takes a basic, I mean, probably your listeners have heard, you know, some variation on the adage that you have to be extremely well educated to be this stupid. But, I mean, there actually is something to that. I mean, because the country, and this isn't just the United States, but across the Western world, you know, advanced, educated nations, but nations where people have lots of leisure and lots of money, become more frivolous. So, therefore, our education institutions have turned more into, rather than actually educating people, you know, helping them actually be accomplished and achieving, you know, learning concrete, you know, bodies of knowledge that are, you know, very discipline heavy and very rigorous. Instead, they're more social clubs. They're more conditioning, even maybe quasi-religious in some senses. But they're about inculcating a certain way of thinking and a certain way of life, such that, you know, of course, all the people in a public school, in any school, you know, right, they all have at least bachelor's degrees. Many of them have master's degrees. So they have spent extra years kind of imbibing this culture. And that culture right now is heavily politically and ideologically progressive. You know, so there's the culture aspect there, but there's also, you know, the social aspect. People don't want to be the ones sticking out. They don't want, and they also don't want, how do you say it? We get these messages from our culture through our entertainment, you know, through the news media, through friends and neighbors on the street. But it's, everybody knows that the perception is that if you stick out on this issue, if you stand up for, frankly, children and propriety and just, you know, basic, like you say, common sense, you are labeled immediately in people's minds. You know, there is a frame of mind that action has been cast as, and it's negative. And so people are reticent to do that. It inhibits them from doing what they should do, which is stand up. And then, of course, there's another factor here, which, of course, is lawsuits. You know, there are very large, very well-funded organizations that spend a lot of money on purpose to crush, absolutely crush any public figure or school district or any other entity that might look like it would do anything different to their political agenda. And so everybody knows that, and they think long and hard and usually capitulate, you know, before they might ever be the one that, you know, is on the receiving end of all of that negative media and legal attention.
Other than simply pulling their kids out of a school district like this and keeping them out of it, do parents in a district like this one in Florida, the Pasco County District, have any recourse in the face of these transgender student policies?
I think that the short answer is no. And I would like to be able to say the opposite, but the reality is that, again, I have been watching this all across the country, and not just on the transgender issue, but before this, particularly on the Common Core issue. When parents go to their school boards about something that is very dearly important to them, even if they have a majority of parents, even if they spend many, many years, you know, overturning school board elections, getting new people elected, getting even new superintendents hired, all of that thing, even if they're that successful, which is a minuscule amount of cases, typically what happens is they go, they say their piece, and the school board votes against them. I would say that's about at least 80% of the time. But if they get to the 90, you know, to the 5%, to the 3%, to the 1%, to even overturning the school board, you know, what typically happens is the school board still folds, or it's overturned in the next election after that, so the victory is very short-lived. And all throughout that time, of course, you know, the children are in this education institution, you know, where they're being taught and they're being violated, you know, and mentally as well as, you know, actually physically sometimes through the many years that it takes to actually have any kind of change. I really don't think that parents have any the actual recourse, because the electoral process for electing school boards and changing it over is extremely broken, and it's just so unlikely that, I mean, I wish I were not so cynical about that, but that's really born of lots of years of observation and experience.
Finally, with only 30 seconds here, Joy, you said early in our conversation that this school district in Florida is not an outlier. How common is this kind of problem in our schools?
Well, when I talked to the attorney on this case for Liberty Counsel, he said that he has never seen a school district that had not that had notified the parents in advance or had not, you know, basically adopted the same kinds of policies. So when it happens basically like this. This is the template. And there is really no way of knowing, given that, like, you know, I just said, the template is to do it without parents' knowledge. So honestly, if parents really are curious about their school district, they should give them a ring, although I doubt that, you know, and just ask to see a copy of their school's policies about bathroom, locker room, sports room, and pronoun use relating to transgender children.
Joy Pullman is the managing editor of The Federalist. She's author of the book, The Education Invasion, and a recent column titled School Punishes Male Teacher for Refusing to Watch a Naked Girl in the Boys' Locker Room. You can read it and purchase The Education Invasion at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Joy, thank you and keep up the good work.
Thank you. You too.
When we come back, it's time to play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. We have the soundbites ready to go. We're going to play them on the other side of the break. You listen and then give us a call, 1-877-623-6943, and your votes will decide which will be Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week.
We Lutherans were never aided by following along with some other tradition's theological priorities and catchphrases.
Issues Etc. regular guest, Pastor Heath Curtis, coordinator for stewardship for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod on a Lutheran approach to stewardship.
Other folks are not approaching it from our good, solid Lutheran understanding of law and gospel and vocation. There's a place to talk about this in Christianity, and we have a way of talking about stewardship as Lutherans without ever using the word stewardship, if you like. I'm going to talk to you today about your vocation in your home, in your church, in your society, and how each one of these makes a claim on you, on your presence, on your support, on your prayers. That's how we should talk about this as Lutherans.
You'll find several stewardship resources at lcms.org/stewardship. lcms.org/stewardship.
No gimmicks, no shticks, just straightforward preaching and teaching in accord with Scripture and the Lutheran confessions. By the book liturgy, right from the hymnal. No glitz, just Christ crucified for sinners like us. We're Grace Lutheran Church in Racine, Wisconsin. Come receive God's gifts with us. Find out more about us at GraceLutheranRacine, that's all one word, .net. And like you, we're proud supporters of Issues Etc.
Memoria Press now offers 8 levels of the Simply Classical curriculum for children with special needs. These full-year packages help you teach reading, writing, arithmetic, art and music, poetry, science, history, Latin, classical and Christian studies in incremental and multisensory ways for mastery. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and enter promo code LPR9 to save on resources for your home or school.
Essential exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
This is Dr. Daniel Gard, president of Concordia University Chicago, with a message for parents, grandparents, and godparents of college-bound children. Concordia University Chicago is a distinctive, comprehensive university of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and we are committed to our Lutheran confession and heritage. Please encourage the student in your life to check out Concordia University Chicago at cuchicago.edu.
What is the state of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod in 2018? Find out in the November issue of the Lutheran Witness. This special edition is filled with information on global mercy work, missions, membership statistics, schools, and more, offering readers a big picture look at the LCMS around the world. Subscribe today at cph.org/witness. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.